Dogs aren't known as man's best friend for nothing, and since people often form very close bonds with their pet dogs, when the sheep Dolly was cloned successfully in Scotland in March 1997, it led some to consider cloning their beloved pets. In Dog Incorporated, the uncanny inside story of cloning man's best friend, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter John Westendick takes a look at the unusual world of animal cloning, its science and technology, our emotional attachments to our pets, and the ethical questions that cloning raises. It's published by Avery. I'm very pleased that it brings John Westendick to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
First, let's start off with what a clone is. How is a clone created?
A clone, layman's version, a clone is created by getting a tissue sample from the dog to be cloned, the donor dog, and then getting an egg cell from an anonymous dog and enucleating it, or taking its nucleus out and inserting the dog to be cloned, his DNA, into the cell, and then putting that into another dog who serves as the surrogate mother.
So this is not all that different than when humans get somebody to be a surrogate mother. They take the sperm and...
Yeah. It's the woman's egg. No sperm is involved, and no man needs to be involved. No male needs to be involved.
But so can a clone be created from any cells, or are male and female reproductive cells required?
No, it doesn't have to be reproductive cells. Like Snuppy, the first dog that was cloned in South Korea in 2005, was the sample they took was from the ear of the original dog.
But since it isn't completely just the other dog, the one dog, is the clone an exact replica of the original?
It isn't always. The companies, there were two companies marketing it. Now there's just one, but they guarantee a physical duplicate pretty much. And though it doesn't, not every clone that gets born is a duplicate. You know, they can just keep doing it until they get it right. So there's often like surplus clones created when they do this.
Well, you point out that Dolly wasn't the first animal clone.
No, she was the first adult mammal cloned.
So that's an important difference. We love our dog. The dog is an adult now.
Yeah.
And we get some cells from it, and we try to make sure that we have a new version of it when our dog is gone.
If we're of that mindset and have money, if we have $100,000.
That's what it costs?
That's what it is now. It was originally like $150,000, and now it's down to $100,000.
So how did Ian Wilmot, the scientist who created Dolly, respond to the reaction? Because there was a lot of negative reaction when he cloned sheep.
Yeah, he thought a lot of the coverage was sensationalized and looked only at sort of the dark side of cloning. But he said even back then he was saying, you know, he didn't foresee the family cat or the family dog ever getting cloned.
Although that's happened.
What it's come to. Yeah, cats are actually.
Well, people also started thinking about cloning humans, didn't they? A new version of ourselves, kind of giving a whole new meaning to the term born again.
Yeah. That's actually the first company that actually said they were going to clone pets was a company formed by the head of a religious sect called the Raelians. And they pretty much said when they announced that this is just practice and we're going to work our way up to people. And they claim they have cloned people. Not too many people believe them, though.
Well, how does this cloning work within the religious thinking of the Raelians?
They think we're all clones. Rael, just to give you a little bit of background, had like a religious experience after meeting a space alien, he says, and later was taken to their planet and learned that everybody on Earth is already a clone. And the religion, sort of like regular religion, teaches you to be godly, you know, Rael. And you'll have your just reward. The Raelians say, you know, if you live up to things, that you'll get cloned.
Didn't a scientist working with the Raelians claim to have cloned a human?
Yeah. I think they're probably claimed to have cloned over 100 by now.
Is that likely?
No, I don't think so. Most people don't take them too seriously. But
Well, can scientists tell if an animal or a human is or isn't a clone?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. They can tell, they can look at it, they can determine whether an animal is cloned from another animal, is a legitimate clone of another animal. But I don't know if they can, you know, just given an anonymous animal, determine that. It's
well, you'd have to have the DNA from the original.
Yeah. Yeah, they compare it to that.
Would it be an exact duplicate of the DNA?
Yeah. Yeah. The animal wouldn't necessarily be an exact duplicate.
Now, why is that? If it's the same DNA, why would the animal be different? Now, there's a story of a bull, a wonderful bull named Chance, mm-hmm. and then they cloned him, and Second Chance was nothing like the original.
Not in ways other than physical. The original Chance was a Brahmin bull, and he was owned by a guy down in Texas named Ralph Fisher who has a photo animal operation where he takes Texas animals around to shows and rodeos and corporate events and lets people get their pictures taken with them. And Chance was this amazingly gentle bull that he sent him in to get a mole removed, and they ended up using the actual mole to make the clone, which was named Second Chance, who turned out to be not quite as gentle as the original Chance.
So is this a matter of nature and nurture?
I think
because
so.
Probably brought up, Second Chance was brought up to be docile.
Yeah, but he didn't have the original Chance until he was 7 years old. And so Second Chance, I think, died before he even reached that age. But there were two sort of attacks on Ralph by Second Chance that took him by surprise because he was convinced that it was, you know, the same animal reincarnated.
Now, you say that he died young. Are clones as healthy as the originals?
I think it's still being figured out, but there's been a lot of evidence pointing that way, that they don't live as long. And I can't give you all the science. It has to do with telomeres and the length of the telomeres and things like that. But I think that's something we'll learn in the future if it all continues.
Well, we're going through an awful lot of trouble and expense to produce something that's going to die young. Wouldn't it just be a lot easier to carefully breed the beloved dog?
If it was a dog capable of breeding and if it was a purebred. I mean, a lot of the appeal in this to people is to people who have, you know, mixed breeds, mutts, who are, you know, unique, one of a kind. They're not even sure what's in it and don't see how they could ever duplicate it. And if that dog's neutered or spayed, this is the route. A few of them, anyway, have gone.
Now, why are we talking only dogs? Your book is called Dog Incorporated. Don't people bond with their cats, rabbits, pigs?
They do.
And horses, especially.
And bulls. Mm-hmm. I focused on dogs because, to me, dogs were the cloning of dog is to me the closest we've come to cloning man by cloning his best friend. And dogs have, you know, just in the past handful of decades sort of become even closer, always been close to us, but they've become more, you know, people now let their dog sleep with them, take them to the daycare and psychiatrists and the like. So they really are becoming like family members. And to me, starting to clone them seemed awful close to cloning ourselves.
But is it just as easy or difficult to clone a dog as a bull or
no,
a sheep?
No, dogs proved the most difficult of the species they've cloned. It came in at 18th, I think, the 18th species to be cloned. And that was related to mainly two things. Their egg cells are opaque. You can't really see through them. And so that and the fact that dogs only go into heat once or twice a year, which is when they need to harvest the egg cells, made it more challenging. Cat was turned out to be relatively easy, even though the first cat clone didn't look much like the cat it was cloned from.
And why is that? Do we know?
It was a calico cat. And again, this goes into like science, even though it's not really a science book. It's kind of science. And this ended up being what led to the breakup between the company marketing cloning and the scientists at Texas A&M University. they were going through several cats, but the one where cloning worked was a calico cat. And calico cats have something, a gene difference, something called X inactivation, which makes them, you know, more unpredictable in terms of their color. And so they cloned, I think, a two-colored cat that came out three colors and then decided to name it Carbon Copy, which brought even more attention to the fact that they weren't exact duplicates. And that led to, I think, a relationship that there was already some tension in, finally coming apart between Texas A&M and the company Genetic Savings and Clone.
Well, let's talk about Texas A&M in just a moment. My guest is Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter John Westendieck, who has a popular blog called Oh My Dog, O-H-M-I-D-O-G. His book, Dog Incorporated, The Uncanny Inside Story of Cloning Man's Best Friend, which is published by Avery. John Sperling is a key figure in the story, and he's at Texas A&M.
He's actually he's in Arizona. I think he's the richest man in Arizona.
But he funded the
he funded yeah he's the founder of the University of Phoenix, and he funded the Texas A&M research to clone a dog that named Missy, who was actually belonged to his longtime friend and lover. They both say.
So what about Missy? Was the cloning successful?
No, that was the hope, that Missy would be the first clone, dog, canine clone, and they worked on it at Texas A&M, and in the process they cloned Second Chance the Bull, and they cloned cats, but they never succeeded with dog. They did achieve one pregnancy, but it didn't come to term. So,
what were the problems? Because dogs have been cloned elsewhere, South Korea, for example.
This was before South Korea.
Mm-hmm. Were they doing something wrong at Texas A&M?
I don't know. Since it was new science, I don't know how you could define wrong or not. It was more trial and error. And it is still pretty much, you know, scattershot trial and error. Do it a lot of times in hopes that one time will work. But they managed to clone several other species, but they couldn't quite pull off dog. And well, then after that, South Korea sort of picked up the ball.
At Seoul National University.
Right.
One of the reasons they were able to be more successful is they had a lot of dogs available. In this country, people are a little uneasy about just trying out an experiment like this on any dog.
Yeah, yeah.
You can eat dog in South Korea.
Correct. Then there's a good supply of dogs there. At Texas A&M, they used beagles, which are the most common laboratory experiment dog, to get the eggs. And they, to their credit, you know, instituted a lot of protocols that sort of went above and beyond the normal animal welfare standards for laboratories. And they found homes for all the dogs they used and gave them names so they weren't just numbers. And they socialized them once their service was complete. But that was always in their heads. In America, there's a lot of concern about this sort of thing. Whereas in South Korea, dogs as pets is more recently catching on.
So were they more interested in the commercial aspects of cloning of dogs?
In South Korea?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't portray it that way. They said it's all for the possible medical advances it might someday lead to. But a few of the scientists even that I talked to, you said, you know, that was one thing, but we really wanted to be first, because South Korea has a little bit of a inferiority complex, you know, that they don't get recognized for what they've contributed to culture and society and science.
Unless North Koreans bomb them or something. What was the first cloned dog, Snuppy, like?
Snuppy, I met Snuppy when I went over there, and Snuppy's a little bit strange. You can hear Snuppy's wails long before they got him down to me. He moans a lot. He lives in the laboratory in a crate, gets out three times a day and is well taken care of, but has human contact, but he doesn't live a dog's life by any stretch. And he's, I guess, six now, and he's been several more clones And he's mated the normal way as well with other dogs so they could study the offspring of clones.
And do clones mate normally? This is not like a mule, is it?
No, clones can go ahead and do things the regular way.
McKinney's was the first to be cloned commercially. And you say it cost her around $100,000?
Originally, when she signed up for it, it was going to be $150,000. And she originally signed up with the John Sperling, Lou Hawthorne Company, Genetic Savings and Clone, and banked her dog. She had a pit bull named Booger. She banked her dog's DNA with them. But then when they went out of business the first time before they sort of came back as a different company, she switched over to the Korean company.
It seems to me that most of the stories you tell are rather unsatisfactory. You have poor Snuppy. You have Tracker, a police dog who was cloned and didn't turn out to be what everybody wanted. And then, of course, there are all the politicians who want to eliminate cloning of any sort.
Yeah.
Are there international rules being developed about cloning?
No, and there's still not much in America, much, you know, as far as I can see, focus or attention or consideration, you know, being given to, you know, should we be cloning dogs? Should we be cloning people? Tracker was actually a dog that a search and rescue dog, police dog, who was cloned, and also, as it was the case with Booger, there ended up being five clones, and in both cases, the owner said, "I'll take all five of them." So
now we have a whole bunch of companies, don't we?
There were two companies. There was the Korean company, RNL Bio, and then there was the company that originally was Genetic Savings and Clone, and later went out of business and then came back into business as BioArts. While it was still Genetic Savings and Clone, after it broke off with Texas A&M, it continued trying to clone a dog, didn't succeed, and later hooked up with one of the SNU scientists who had cloned Snuppy to clone dogs for them to be sold.
So what's the current situation? If I have a dog that I really love and want it cloned, what happens?
You would contact the South Korean company, RNL Bio, and Bernan McKinney in any way require a down payment of any sort. But you'd agree that to make a deal, you'd take your dog to have a similar to like a biopsy, just like a little punch sort of thing that would get the cell sample that was needed. It would be shipped over to Korea, and then you'd wait and hope for the best.
John Westendieck's book, Dog Incorporated, The Uncanny Inside Story of Cloning Man's Best Friend, is published by Avery. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.